This means that Donald Trump will be the 45th president of the United States.
This is your life now. This is our election now. This is us. This is our country. It's real.
Hi, and welcome back to the 45th. Rabia here, once again, with Susan. Susan, it's like we never leave.
It isn't. It is exactly like that, in fact. It's almost like day 526 of quarantine. I cannot tell any longer where we are.
Yeah. So we live in the D.C. area, and there's been some changes in the last couple of days. We've gone on pretty much kind of full lockdown in Maryland, stay-at-home orders. I think Virginia has done the same, except for some essential businesses like golf courses for some reason. But what's going on in D.C.?
The same thing. I think like an hour or two after Virginia and Maryland made the call, D.C. did the same thing.
Okay. I think they're coordinating, I think, on this.
Yeah.
And there is some fear that this is going to be kind of the next hotspot area. It's interesting, every day in these coronavirus task force briefings, like, they never really talk about this area, and which is a good thing, I guess.
D.C. is doing, the D.C. area is actually doing pretty good. We have cases, there's been deaths, but overall, we are not the, well, I mean, they have been saying lately it's going to be the next problem spot, but I'm kind of unclear why that is, because our numbers have not been bad. And if you look at the charts of like the very invasive and kind of creepy cell phone tracking of movements, the D.C. area is one of the most compliant with the lockdown orders. It had like one of those biggest reductions of movement.
Oh my God. You can actually follow that?
Oh, we haven't seen those? Those are so scary. Like they're supposedly quote unquote anonymized or whatever the word is. But you can definitely tell from the data they have, like which phone, you can figure out who certain phones are. Like they had a
Are you kidding me? That's insane. Okay, I gotta say that.
Okay, a New York Times had an article, it's like probably a year ago now, where they had the data set and they show the phones moving and they could tell the phone of one of the Secret Service agents protecting Trump. Because it moved from like the White House to Mar-a-Lago alongside him.
Remember that a little bit. I've seen like that graphic or whatever, like something like that that showed how spring breakers, like where their phones all went afterwards, and also movements of people out of Wuhan, like during New Year's, like right for New Year's, and so that. But I didn't know this is something that's like you can get it for states, like ongoing. I guess there's no reason you wouldn't be able to.
Yeah. So, but according to that, DC is like, you know, we're obedient little public servants for the most part.
That's good.
But they do say that we may be in that sort of danger zone. Although, really, it's the ones right now that I'm most concerned about are, other than New York, of course, it looks like Michigan, Louisiana, and Florida.
Mm. Yeah. Well, let me ask you this. Just do a little personal check-in. How's it been? I mean, they don't feel like they've changed much for me with the stay-at-home. We were pretty much staying at home anyways, but how are you doing?
Yeah, we were already staying at home. Now we're staying at home, well, I'd say even more, but it'd be hard to be more at home than we have been lately. So.
Yeah. I did spend a couple of frantic days trying to figure out, does this mean the nanny can travel to my house? As you can't.
Oh, does it mean that? Yeah, what's the verdict?
No. So domestic workers is how they are identified. Nannies and babysitters and stuff like that, they're kind of exempt from this as long as they're traveling to and from their place of work. And also I can drop my son off too. But for a while there. So also there's like some exemption for people who work for somebody who's considered an essential employee. And I mean, I know our work is very important, Susan, but we're considered essential employees.
Robbie, we are very
right
essential.
Now.
I want to hear it.
We're essential.
Podcasters are what the world needs right now.
That's right. But my daughter, my adult daughter, who has been quarantined with us, is essential. She had got a letter from the D.C. government saying she's an essential. And I was like, do I have to just pretend like my little one is her son? what am I going to have to do? Because she's got certain exemptions. But no, otherwise it's kind of the same. I'm going to go pick up my dad today because now he's, ever since like the announcement, it's kind of freaked him out further, although I told him it shouldn't make a big difference to him. So
I've been following you on Twitter, Robbie. It seems like your dad is one of those parents, like possibly mine too, who is somehow has the busiest social life of all time.
Just now.
Just now?
That, and you know, my dad's a veterinary doctor. He's like an educated medical professional. And I can't tell you how many arguments we have had where I'm pleading him to stop shoving steam into his like face. I mean, he can steam his face, but it's not going to kill coronavirus. And he's convinced, thanks to a lot of WhatsApp videos, that it's going to happen.
What is the mechanism there exactly? Like, what do they think is going to happen with that steam?
I'll tell you exactly what the theory. This is an actual conversation I had with my father today. He goes, listen, Rabia. He's like, I've done my research. I am a medical professional. I was like, oh my God. He said, well, by the way, there are actually videos that doctors have made. So, you know, like this, anyway. And he was like, so, you know, viruses cannot withstand certain, and that's why Trump said, you know, in April it gets warmer, it'll make the virus unstable. And it's true. You have to reach like 140 degrees and you don't want anything that's 140 degrees anywhere
down
near
your
nostrils. Jesus. Or down your throat or in your eyes.
Or just anywhere on you. Like that's, no.
And I'm trying to explain that. And then I said, you know, I was like, you know, it's okay if you do it, but don't think that that means you can go out. I'm like, I don't care if you want to steam yourself all day. Just keep it quiet. Just don't go out thinking I'll just come home and steam myself and it'll be okay. That's the real danger here. But there's a lot of snake oilsmen out there. I was just reading an article today in the New Yorker about Alex Jones. He is minting money off on his website, selling all this silver colloidal, I don't know what it's called, like these supplements, and it's crazy, awful stuff. And people, they're sold out, along with another, Jim Baker is also selling this gel in something called the Vivify Holistic Clinic. They're saying it kills every virus.
I know there was a statement from the DOJ. It was like, oh, we're going to prioritize prosecuting these kind of scams, as well as like price gougers and hoarders. But at least from what I've seen, they haven't really done much to stop the Alex Joneses of the world.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they're going to. Alex Jones and Jim Baker's, I mean, they're well respected in this administration. They're not going to be shut down, I don't think. But so I wanted to ask you before we got into it, before we got into the news. I have been seeing some really, I mean, we're going to talk about like the issues with like, you know, PPE and other kinds of, you know, protective equipment that people are using, and all whether or not we should be wearing masks or not wearing masks. But I saw the most, I would say, creative masking method on Twitter a couple days ago. But let me ask you, what is the most creative thing you've seen so far in terms of self-made masks?
I mean, like creative, like, effective or creative artistic?
Oh, no. We don't care about effectiveness here. I'm just talking about like imagination and creativity.
Well, I have seen, these aren't really creative, but I have seen those Trump 2020 masks, like surgical masks they're selling. I'm like, wow, this is some dark timeline shit right here.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I have not seen those. Well, I saw a photograph of a husband and wife, a little bit older, who were out grocery shopping, and I swear to God, they both have maxi pads stuck to their faces. The ones with wings, and you know what? Like one wing over the nose, one wing under the chin, and the long parts across the mouth. Yes, yeah. Right? Kind of makes sense to me.
I mean, it's not the worst mask I've seen. I mean, on the other hand, if those are like in short in stores too, you might want to prioritize that for other stuff, but...
Right, but you know what? Look, you can get so many more of them than you can of like other masks, like regular masks that are being...
That's true.
First of all, you can't even get regular masks. Anyhow, I just thought it was really creative, and I have to wonder if that man had any idea what his wife stuck to his face.
So my current obsession is that according to my Amazon order history, in 2018, we got a 20-pack of N95 masks.
What?
And I vaguely recall this, and I know for a fact we use one or two max.
Why would you order that?
I think probably because it was cheaper to buy. We had some like dust we were going to... go through in the garage to clean out.
Oh.
But where are they now? Like, I know we didn't use them all. So theoretically, they're somewhere here. Like some pure gold. The poor
within
95
mask.
How have
you not turned the house upside down?
I need to. I need like a full court like press here to find that box.
Videotape that thing. I had a little epiphany. I had an epiphany a few days ago because we had a New Year's Eve party. And a couple days before the party... I wasn't feeling so. That was leading up to like I had like a month of not feeling well. I had this. Remember, I was like sick for like 3-4 weeks. It was the worst flu I had in my life.
Did you have the COVID?
I don't know. Now I wonder because I've never had a flu that lasted 3-4 weeks.
When was that? That was like kind of before this
December.
All happened, but it was really bad. Oh, December. So it was, yeah.
But you know, I travel quite a bit.
A lot.
I don't know. And I had a couple other friends who had similarly terrible, like 3-4 week lasting flu. So anyhow, we were having this New Year's Eve gathering, and one of my friends was like, well, I'm not coming. I don't want to get sick from all you people. Another friend who's a doctor, I didn't remember this until last week, brought hand sanitizer and masks as a joke to the party. And I'm in the shower. I'm like, wait a minute. I have to have these masks somewhere because she left them here. And I found them. But they're surgical masks, but they're better than nothing, I guess.
That's better than nothing.
Is it though?
Rabia, I saw a headline today that was basically designed for me. Turns out that, yes, it is okay to live on quesadillas right now. It's okay.
How can that be a headline? How can that be a headline? I don't believe it.
It's important news that you can use. So it is absolutely okay right now in this time of national or global hardship to, if you had to just live on quesadillas and, well, in my case, chicken sandwiches, nonstop. It's okay. Just do what you got to do. However, that is probably going to leave some gaps in your diet.
Just some. There's a great way to fill it, and we know what that is.
Ritual. It is the easiest vitamin that covers everything a woman needs if you're currently living on chicken sandwiches like me. Or if you're just trying to do better but need some help.
Yeah. I'll be honest. So, you know, I have friends who are like on these Zoom, like all day I keep getting invited to doing Zoom like yoga and Zoom Pilates and Zoom. And I'm like, I'm just going to take my ritual and sit very still and I'll be just fine. But I have been. That's one way I've been taking care of myself is I'm trying to get a lot of sleep and I'm taking my vitamins.
For obsessive label readers, Ritual uses vegan certified, non-GMO, gluten-free, and allergen-free ingredients. And their sources are out there for the whole world to see because they believe you deserve to know what you're putting in your body and why.
Ritual only uses high quality ingredients. They use vegan algal oil. And for me, it's important, by the way, for my vitamins to be vegan because there's some stuff I just will not take. And that's what they use instead of fish oil, which comes from the fermentation of microalgae, which is a patented process that leaves minimal environmental contamination.
And 40% of women cannot properly utilize the synthetic form of folate or folic acid, which can be found in many multivitamins. And that's why Ritual uses folate in its absorbable form to help cover women's needs.
You know what, like, one of the best reasons to use Ritual right now is, Susan?
What?
You don't have to leave your house to get it. We can't leave our houses anyway.
Yes, it shipped right to you.
Ritual comes straight to your door. It comes right to your door every month.
Did you know that you can also get cocktails to your door now? I just discovered that. Unrelated.
Okay, but take your rituals with the cocktail. I mean, look, daily changes can lead to big results. So start small today. Ritual's offering our listeners 10% off your first 3 months. Try it out. Satisfaction guaranteed. Just go to ritual.com/45th and start your ritual today. That's 10% off during your first 3 months at ritual.com/45th. Okay, let's talk about this because the story's shifting. It used to be a few weeks ago, it's better not to wear the masks. They will hold droplets. Now what?
So this is all, I think, is going to be a massive failure on the WHO's part, World Health Organization.
Yeah.
And it's going to be problematic for stopping this virus and possibly ones in the future because what happened is when the, you know, it first started expanding beyond China, it was very quickly realized that we did not have enough protective gear for everyone. Mm. And in fact, we don't have enough just for medical workers. Right. So out of fear that the already limited supplies would be hoarded by everyone else on this planet, a lot of statements were made by both like international organizations, by the US government that, oh, if you're a normal person, you don't need a mask. You only need that. It's only really effective if you're,
sick
healthcare provider or if you're personally sick.
Right.
Also, don't hoard the N95 mask because you're like a dumb idiot who probably can't wear it right anyway. So it'll be a waste. And all of this was geared at trying to get people not to hoard masks and to preserve them for use by healthcare workers who definitely need them more. Right. However, the messaging was false and I think a horrendous decision because now there's this confusion and misinformation about whether these masks actually help or not. And the answer is they do. They absolutely help.
Yeah.
They absolutely are a vital tool towards reopening the country eventually and carrying on normal life. And they're effective. Not perfectly, but they are effective. And because of this messaging, it's going to be really hard now to sort of reverse on that and get
that
people to wear them.
I mean, here's the thing, though. I mean, the people still hoarded them. People who wanted them still got them. Because here's the thing. You're telling us one thing. On the other hand, all the healthcare workers are not just wearing masks, especially like in South Korea. So they are completely geared up. Like, you can't completely covered head to toe in protective gear. And then you're telling citizens, oh, you kind of, for some reason, it's makes them safer, but not you safer. And a lot
of logic tells you that's wrong.
Exactly. It didn't make sense to me. I was like, this, I don't get that. But anyway, we didn't have the masks anyway. So, I mean, those things started selling out very
But we
soon.
Will have them. And even surgical masks help.
Yeah, yeah.
We now have
You
to
can make them
with...
at home. You can make them at home. I bought some stuff and I've been tooling around with like my nanny and my daughter and we're trying to create cute little ones. And mostly we're just staying home. We're just going to use them if we go to the grocery store or something. But all right.
So I think one thing we're going to find out though too is that this whole 6 foot thing is very much sort of a proxy for what actually stops the spreading and is not really, it's kind of arbitrary because the more we know about how it spreads, this thing is airborne in every effective sense of the word.
There's Susan, really? I just thought
The problem, like saying what does airborne mean? Like, what does that even like refer to? Like, it's a very, it's not like a, like the old school miasma theory where it's just floating everywhere around.
Okay.
But can it travel by air farther than 6 feet? From everything we know, absolutely fucking yes.
So, for example, somebody sneezes, coughs, it's released into the air. You can inhale it if you're maybe 10 feet away.
Yes. And the droplet theory means like that won't be as far up a transfer, but it is not being limited to this small range. I mean, have you seen the stories of that chorus group that met out in Connecticut?
Yes. Like the- right. There's like, I think 75% of them got sick or something. They were just singing together.
Yes.
But then
and
I read an article
close together, singing. But they're not like all in 6 feet of one another.
Yeah. And they're also not like facing each other. I mean, but the article also noted, well, one of the articles I read noted that apparently singing expels a lot of stuff into the air, like more so than you expect.
Oh my God. I bet like, that's probably, yeah. So wouldn't just like, if they'd gathered in a room and sat quietly, maybe it wouldn't have been as bad, but the singing.
That would be a terrible chorus of rehearsal, though.
So what we also know too is that, I mean, they've done contact studies of like how the virus spread on planes and on buses and also just for regular flu, the same thing. And you can see that the 6 feet thing is not going to save you every time. This thing is effectively airborne. And from what we know, the masks probably primarily help by stopping you from spreading it.
Right.
But they do provide protection somewhat from the rest of the world. But the big important part is that it stops you from spreading it to others as easily.
Sure. That's fair. All right, let's talk a little bit about the numbers. Right now we're looking at the numbers I saw today. We're looking at a little bit over 892,000 cases worldwide and 44,408 deaths worldwide. The United States, we are inching in on 200,000.
We just crossed the 200,000 mark.
Did we? Literally, you know what? I wrote this figure like an hour and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
Which was 197,000. Now we're at 200,000, 4,300 deaths as of an hour and a half ago. 30 states have stay-at-home orders. And that's actually great to know because I think that was my, you know, one of the big concerns is like, you know, so many states are not, I mean, it's already a shit show at the federal level. So states have to take leadership. And a lot of states were like not. And it took until today, DeSantis in Florida finally issued a stay-at-home order.
Oh, they did?
Just like an hour ago.
I missed that. Thank God.
Yeah.
Who would have guessed that a state full of Florida mans would be one of the last ones to actually do something intelligent? What the hell? Florida's going to be a disaster. It's going to be,
yeah.
I mean, poor Georgia. Georgia's also screwing it up, but like, they're going to be, you know, what can they do
and
now?
Florida like, has a huge, you know, community of retirees. I mean, it's just, I don't know. But yeah, they finally did. So we got 30 states, which is pretty good. The other 20 odd need to get on board. But about the numbers though, this is kind of interesting. Now, China, we don't know what China's numbers are. Apparently just today or yesterday, I don't know. The U.S. intelligence agencies, concluded in a classified report of the White House that China has, quote, concealed the extent of coronavirus outbreak in its country, underreporting both total cases and deaths. And this is something that, you know, I've seen floated around and it makes total sense. A country like China, I kind of wouldn't expect.
Of course they're underreporting, yeah.
Yeah. One of the stories came out around this was the discrepancy between the number of urns being ordered versus the number of deaths being reported. And it was like twice as many urns, like, you know, cremation urns.
But also it's not even, so I saw that one too. And it seems very clear that they are underreporting and that the full extent is not being shown either. I mean, none of the numbers in China are ever actually true. But at the same time, it doesn't seem like they are underreporting to like an order of magnitude. Because, yeah, the urn study showed that there were too many urns ordered, what we expected. But also, it's not just a simple, like, you can't just say, oh, they got twice as many urns as they needed, because regular deaths happen too. Like, what? I think for a city of, like, Wuhan size, you expect, like, 200, 250 deaths a day normally. So that's a backlog there that factor in.
Yeah.
And there's another study going around with, like, the 21 million missing phones that was totally bogus. That's not at all. There was, like,
I didn't hear about that.
It's a bogus study. They're like, oh, these 21 million phones existed before the outbreak, and now they're not being used.
Ooh.
That's not.
It's not real.
Yeah.
Fake news.
So yeah, they're underreporting, but like, and they probably have more cases than we are reporting now. But also, we have a lot more cases than we're reporting now.
Yeah, we do, because the testing is not happening. And so, should we talk about that? Testing, supplies, where are we today?
Yeah, well, let's listen to what Trump had to say on a call with the governors just a couple days ago.
We're trying to shift the supplies to really isolate that and do contact tracing, but we just don't have enough supplies to even do the testing.
Tony, you can answer it if you want, but I haven't heard about testing in weeks. We've tested more now than any nation in the world. We've got these great tests, and we come out with another one tomorrow where it's, almost instantaneous testing. But I haven't heard about testing being a problem.
Yeah, so that was Trump talking to the governors, one of his, daily governor calls that apparently go so tremendously well every time, according to his updates of the press briefings. He's like, oh, we solved that. It's all done. It's been weeks since we had problems with testing kits. No, it's not been weeks. It is still today, still massively a problem, basically in every state in the U.S. We are not testing everyone who we should be testing. And there are so many cases. Go on Twitter. You'll see like 100 million cases of people who almost certainly had COVID. And doctors were like, yep, you got it. But we can't test you, so go home
and
recover.
Can't test you. Or they got tested and it's taking an average of 8 days to get results.
Or like 15 in one case. Like, what's the point? Like, we don't even know. I mean, yeah, at that point, why even test?
Right. So I read that Maryland's Governor Larry Hogan, when he responded to Trump saying that, he's like, it's just not true. He's like, it's just not true that getting access to testing is no longer a problem. And today CNN reported, because remember, do you remember when Trump said that, Walmarts and CVSs would be setting up drive-through testing like all around the country? Right now, out of 30,000 potential lots that they're looking at setting up testing, only 5 drive-throughs have been set up nationwide. Five.
I mean,
I was like, is that missing a one or something? Like, 5.
Our media has not learned in 3 years of this how to report on Trump, and they never will at this point, I'm convinced. But Trump just says lies, and he gets like a boost from telling the lie, and there's never a consequence, so he'll keep doing it. Or not one that matters. So he's like, gets all the headlines. Like, Trump says we'll have a million tests in a week. They're not here. That's never the story.
Right. Well, I mean, it's always framed. Trump says this, but others say this.
Yeah.
And instead of just saying, Trump is lying about this, this is the truth. Like, these are the facts. So you want to talk a little bit about the daily press rallies, which is now what I call them. These are press rallies. And this is exactly, you were right. He is basically just substituting his rallies with these pressers.
I mean, and Trump is Trump. But yeah. I will say the part for me has been most disturbing has been everyone else on the stage. Because Trump's always just Trump. But the last week, the time I started to have some, I mean, I've been unsettled and nervous and, worrying a lot for a while now, but my first total gut check, like what the hell is going to happen moment came watching a briefing last week, I think probably Thursday maybe or Wednesday. And Dr. Birx and Dr. Fauci got on stage and after Trump did his little thing, whatever, his little tap dance routine. And the briefing they gave was just shockingly optimistic. And it addressed everything as if the problem had been solved. This is the crisis was over, essentially. For 2 days, this happened. You had 2 back-to-back briefings where both Fauci and Birx were speaking as if we had figured this out. There's still some stuff to get through ahead, but otherwise, we're good to go. There was no shortage of any materials. Dr. Fauci was insistent that, we don't even need to worry about making masks at home because there's enough. There's no shortages.
And this was around the same time as the end this shit by Easter.
Yes.
Also announcement. Yeah.
Yeah. So the day after the Easter stuff. And they were talking about Dr. Fauci kept addressing the next wave. His remarks always we need to get ready for the second wave that comes in the fall. And then you had Dr. Birx, I had posted on Twitter a picture of the pink lady from North Korea wearing a Dr. Birx scarf, because that's essentially what she's become. But she was just, I don't know. She scares me. She is so full of disinformation that she just cheerily announces if we're all her slow, disappointing students that she's going to carefully walk us through this lesson anyway. The Americans are scared of the models, but really that's ridiculous. That's never going to happen. Don't be concerned about that. Everything is being fixed now. And she just gave these nonsense answers. At one point she was asked about, community level testing and figuring out like where hotspots are or not. And she gave an answer based on her previous work in HIV, where she was like, oh, well, in sub-Saharan Africa, we can give you a GPS data point for every clinic there is in Africa. So we can do that here. I'm like, what? How is that going to fix anything? Like, what are you even, what are these words you're saying?
What are you responding to?
Yeah, like she just gives, she gives empty nonsense responses that are, that just give this horribly misleading idea that everything is now okay and on the right track. And at no point during those 2 days did they ever acknowledge there was a current problem.
And she also said in those, I think it was last Friday, she said, and she was doing an interview and she said something about to the effect that Trump, given his business acumen, like brought this incredible analytical skills to like the data he was being provided. And I was like, what in the fuck is she talking about?
You know what? Let's hear that. Like, let's hear Dr. Birx talking from the White House about Trump's approach to fighting the coronavirus.
You describe the job President Trump is doing behind the scenes and in front of the cameras during these daily briefings that we're seeing. What's been your perspective, Dr. Birx?
He's been so attentive to the scientific literature and the details and the data. And I think his ability to analyze and integrate data that comes out of his long history in business has really been a real benefit during these discussions about medical issues. Because in the end, data is data, and he understands the importance of the granularity. And I think he's been really excited about finding the level of detail that we've been able to now bring over the last few weeks to really understand who's at the greatest risk for severe illness, who will have mild and less and asymptomatic disease, and really calling on every American to do that social distancing, because some people may not know they're actually infected and be unknowingly spreading the virus. And that all comes from the president seeing the data and then really directing these policies and these guidelines that go out to the American people.
So she's fully drunk the Trump Kool-Aid. I don't really know much. I know Dr. Fauci has served 6 presidents. He's been, you know, he's been around forever. He's highly respected. And I think he's been doing a really difficult kind of thing to keep on top of this. I don't know much about her.
I don't think she's drunk the Kool-Aid. I don't think she's like a Trump supporter or booster in that sense, like as a political matter. I think she has very much decided that her role for helping America is to pretend or be a Trump supporter and to give positive reviews and to like be the person he wants on the stage.
Well, the reviews change though.
But then something changed. We had those two days where I was like, okay, well, like, and just by myself, I started to believe it. Not believe it. I was still very skeptical. But part of me was like, okay, let's look at the numbers. And at that point, as they were talking about in the briefings,
I'm open to hope.
Yeah. Like New York's numbers did look like they'd stable, like not stabilized, but they were decelerating. They weren't peak, right, but they were decelerating. And like there was like some reason you could look at the data and see like, okay, maybe I see why they're being suddenly so optimistic. And if we really are like days or weeks away from extensive serology testing, like they were suggesting we might be, then you know what? Maybe this is feasible. And then over the weekend, something happened. I don't know what. Something happened. They got some new data. Something happened because on
Sunday night, MyPillow guy showed up in the Rose Garden. There was that.
It's like the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse. Like, but something happened because by Sunday, the entire tone had shifted. All the optimism was gone. And we suddenly just had airily thrown out during one of these briefings, like, oh, yeah, by the way, if we do everything perfectly and we have like an optimal performance from here on out, we're going to have 100 to 240,000 Americans die.
That's about it. Okay.
My God.
So let me ask you about this. This is being received in all kinds of ways. Yesterday at the briefing, they repeated this. They were asked again, pressed on the numbers. And, you know, Trump didn't really want to answer the number question directly. He's like, I'm going to let one of the doctors answer this, because he just like, I don't, he didn't want to say the numbers out loud. But again and again, is Dr. Birx. So Dr. Birx gets up there and she was like, listen, we've used lots of different models to try to predict this, and this is where we're landing. She's like, we don't want to see this. We hope it's not this. We're going to do everything in our power, which is not really happening. But she's like, you know, we're going to try everything we can to make sure the numbers are lower, because this is not what we want, but this is what we project. And on one hand, so the response to this was, oh my God, they're making this sound like this is going to be him doing a good job and this is good news and this is awful. But the thing is, I want the facts. If those are the facts, I appreciate them actually giving us the facts instead of downplaying the facts.
But they shouldn't have downplayed it early. Like it's the whiplash that's, to me, is so unnerving. Is this like constant ricochet?
Is it just new data? Is it just new modeling?
It shouldn't have been.
They didn't know before.
When they were, nothing had changed. Like that, I could see in the data from their often like extremely crazy optimistic, like, you know, it's all, we've hit the hump. You can tell that we've, when the numbers start stabilizing, they start going down pretty soon after. And then they're like, oh, by the way, we went from like, you know, hardly anyone dead to a quarter of a million dead.
Yeah.
Not to mention the whole craziness where we had Trump on hand. And he's like, I'm not going to give New York the 30,000 ventilators because I don't think they need them.
Hey, Susie, remember when I talked about giving my dad like a gift he's never gotten that he loved?
Yes.
We were talking about the Ember.
The Ember Wave.
The Ember Wave, yes. And I got one for myself.
So, oh.
Like my dad, I'm just one of those people, my hands and feet are always freezing. My extremities, it's like there's no blood circulates in them. But I did something that maybe was a little bit unorthodox, but it worked. I actually put it around my ankle instead of my wrist
just
a few weeks
thinking
ago.
That. Does it work? Because like I'm right now legit wearing 3 pairs of socks.
It worked.
Okay.
It worked. My feet warmed up. I just held them close together. And I was like, I'm sorry, Ember Wave. I know maybe this was not how your product was meant to be used, but here I am, and it's working.
I mean, it may look like a GPS monitor, but if it gets the job done.
That's right. For those of you who are not familiar with Ember Wave, well, Ember Lab's mission is to bring thermal wellness to the world. They're passionate about using temperature to help every person feel better physically and emotionally. And in a time like this, believe me, you can use an Ember Wave.
Yeah. Some places you can use Ember Wave include your over air conditioned office, restaurants, airplanes, after workout, malls, in the car, crowded public places. But that's for later. Right now, you can use it in your home to deal with, you know, maybe you and your spouse not agreeing on what temperature the aircon should be on.
This is like everyday, constant, daily conversation. Half of us are cold and half of us are hot, and it's awful. So for those
Ember Wave,
cold,
making quarantine better.
Absolutely. Keeping families together, basically. This, you know, personal thermal device is keeping us together.
So to receive $50 off your first order, head to emberwave.com/45th. Again, that's emberwave.com/45th to receive $50 off your order.
Okay, on Monday is when we first heard these numbers. And on Monday is also, I think, when Trump said, oh, by the way, he didn't even mention Easter. He's like, I'm putting in these guidelines until the end of April. So he extended those. He still will not call for a national stay-at-home order. It is what it is. But not only did he also, and this was shocking, I can't stop thinking about this. Every few hours, I sit and think about like what he actually said. He has suggested over and over now in the last few days that something is happening, that nurses in New York or doctors in New York or somebody is like, what are they doing? He's like, you know, suddenly they went all these masks. They
oh God.
Need all these
the
masks.
Embezzlement
what are they
masks.
Doing with all these masks? The embezzlement. Yeah. Like there's some kind of underground trade or they're enriching themselves. I mean,
the great mask caper.
Shocking to me. These are people on the front lines who are risking their life every hour of every day. And he's accusing doctors and nurses of stealing masks, I guess. I don't know what else he's saying.
Yeah, because he was asking the journalists to go investigate. He's like, oh, there's no way that they could have increased. Like, how on earth do they need this many masks now? Because there's a pandemic raging. Duh. Like, how is this even a real thing that crosses his head? Like, there's a great...
Well, I'll tell you why. Because yesterday a journalist... Well, no, there's that. There's absolutely that. A journalist asked him about this yesterday's briefing, and he said, well, somebody who's very powerful, some powerful business person told him this, that this needs to be looked into because something funny is going on. I don't know who that person is. So somebody put it in his head.
It was him. Horrifying part of all of this is in... the midst of these like crazy attacks on journalists, like which are frequent, bizarre, just tantrums on stage, like his comparison of his ratings for his
every
press
day.
Briefings to like the final rose ceremony on The Bachelor. Amid all this, at times he'll like go like through a peer, like a whole 5-minute stretch where he'll be like kind of quiet and like, yeah, this is some serious stuff, guys. No one's ever heard anything like this before. It's pretty rough, man. Like that's all it takes for suddenly the news story to not be Trump says that there's going to be a quarter million people die and he didn't get his testing shit together in time to stop it. Instead of that being the headline is Trump is suddenly somber and presidential and gives very serious address. Like, that's the news they take from it. Not the fact that how many are going to die, but like the fact that Trump basically avoided throwing up on himself for long enough to be noticeable.
Trump does not defecate himself today, but he does. He does, because he defecates himself every time he attacks journalists, which is literally every single day.
It's like a slightly Trump lesser tweeted. Rate of like self-destruction. And they're like, wow, he's so somber and presidential.
Yeah. The truth is, I mean, there are he has moments of sobriety and somberness, but I really feel like there are, he knows that he has to have them right now because you can't. But then there's never a briefing in which he doesn't resort back to his, like, you know, his normal self. 2 days ago is when he tweeted twice about his ratings. He said, quote, President Trump is a ratings hit. Since surviving the daily White House briefing, Mr. Trump and his coronavirus updates have attracted an average audience of 8.5 million on cable news, roughly the viewership of the season finale of The Bachelor.
Yeah.
And then he goes on to keep tweeting about it 2-3 times. But here's the thing, though. I don't know about the TV ratings, but his goddamn poll numbers are actually up. They're up.
No, they're not. I mean, yes. It is just the crisis bump.
Gallup is 49%. Fox is 48%.
It's the crisis bump.
He hasn't broken 50. That, you're right. It is a crisis bump. But it's also the spin. It's also the spin. Because
it is.
Here's the new GOP play. See, what he's doing is this. He's making the appearance. Now, much of his base is not watching these briefings every single day. But they're like, hey, he's up there every day talking about this. He's got a task force. Every day he recites the numbers of, you know, ventilators and masks. And
he pulls my pillow guy on stand to talk about how great Trump is.
Exactly. And say a prayer for him. But the new GOP play is this. This has been circling. The new talking point is that Trump was hindered from paying attention early on to COVID-19 because of the impeachment hearings.
Yeah, but that's not going to work because Trump's going to be like, wait, we did perfectly. This is not true. I wasn't hindered by anything. They're not going to have his buy-in from that to make that narrative
stick.
Susan,
the thing is like, the thing is, he does. He can. Like, look, we've seen this in trials. We've seen it in trials where prosecutors will present two absolutely, like, contradictory facts, and the jury's like, okay, that makes sense to me. And that's what's happening. Trump is simultaneously saying, I couldn't pay attention, and saying, I did it perfectly. And people are like, yep.
I think there definitely has been an extreme messaging failure from the Democrats, who are too afraid to be seen attacking the president in time of crisis. And the media framing instinct, which is to give deference to the lie, is helping him. But overall, I don't think that bump is reflecting a real change. I think part of it is probably people who are like so like afraid of what's happening that they don't want to believe that Trump is an incompetent narcissist. And so out of self-preservation, they're probably like, yeah, he can do this. It's cool. Doesn't mean they support him anymore. It doesn't mean they're changing their views about him overall or vote for him more. But there's like an instinct there to be like, yeah, he's got this. We got this. He does not got this. He absolutely does not got this.
So there is a meme I saw on social media being shared. It's a picture of Trump and it's got like a few talking points. And this is his Trump supporter meme. And this is what it says. These are bullets. He told us to protect our borders. He told us to bring manufacturing back home. He told us to be less dependent on other countries. He warned us about China. Democrats fought him every step of the way. I really think this man wins on messaging, and I think they're going to continue to. And I don't care if we lose 250,000 Americans. I think
the numbers
don't
matter.
Find a way.
He will. Yeah, how
he's going to find a way to win.
However many die, he will always say, "It would have been so much worse if I hadn't been president. If I hadn't done this,
or if the Democrats hadn't prevented me from XYZ."
Yeah, but it's a man. Of course, Biden in late January was writing an op-ed about how like this is a serious moment. We need to prepare right now. And everyone, like, basically, like, we know it's coming. Let's do something. So the idea that, like, there were not warning signs out there from the Democrats is not true. But at the same time, we lost that month of February. And looking back, I mean, there's a lot of failures from a lot of people, a lot of organizations, a lot of institutions. But what happened is no one, I think there's sort of the sense that everyone thought that if there was a real problem, if things were really going to be this bad, there would have been more of a signal from the powers that have the ability to see the data and know this. The people who should have known things weren't reacting the way that we'd expect them to if there was a real threat. So this complacency set in, even in the face of data that showed what we were up against. And those weeks when we could have been preparing, we just lost them.
I feel like there's going to come a time. And, you know, there was some reporting about like all these frantic emails going back and forth to CDC as they saw this coming, like in January and stuff. There's going to come a time where we're going to get information about briefings that Trump had about this, like early as, you know, end of December, January. Because as it starts unfolding in China, I'm sure intelligence agencies are like, wait a minute, we got to keep an eye on this. What's happening? You know, the Pentagon. and briefing this president on it. But for him, it's always about image and messaging versus the reality. It's always about how is this going to hurt me or help me. And
the economy too. He didn't want to spook the economy.
Right. He didn't want to spook the economy.
Remember he was like, I don't want to let this cruise ship land in California because I want the numbers to go up. And now we're at like 200,000 people, as if the one cruise ship would have made a difference at all.
Yeah. So a couple of stories that I wanted to mention in terms of the response. Okay. Picking and choosing when, who, how to supply. I read a story a couple of days ago that it seems like Florida has been given, you know, in Florida, the governor there is very supportive of Trump. Trump is having some real issues with the governor of Michigan and, of course, California. And he's talked and he said it a number of times publicly. Like, you know, the people need, I mean, he was like, if they got to be nicer to me, basically. But that he's really making decisions on who to send and what supplies politically. And this story shocked me. Apparently, the Pentagon has 2,000 ventilators in military stocks. They've had them. They're like, they were just waiting. They're like, Health and Human Services, DHHS, has not told us where to ship them. They're like, we're ready to ship immediately. So you have this administration that knows there's these 2,000 ventilators just sitting there. This is not part of the strategic national stockpile that we have. This is a different set of ventilators that the Pentagon has. And they're like, we just need a location. Nobody's telling us where to send them. A lieutenant general wrote a letter or something. But to me, this is just a sign again that Trump is just biding his time.
To some extent, that does make sense, because the goal of the federal government is not to prioritize any single state, but to make sure we can respond as best we can everywhere. But the fear, and it's totally based on his own statements that he makes every day, is that he will choose to disperse those not based on need, but on political benefit to him. So, and yeah, right now you've got 50 states, well, not all the states are reacting the way they should, but you've got maybe 30 states, 25 states who are reacting appropriately and are now like in who are definitely in conflict with one another to get supplies that they need at the expense of other states. So they're all scrambling to get stuff for themselves, as you'd expect. And Trump has made it clear that the federal government is going to weigh in ways that benefit not the nation as a whole or the most people, but the ways that will help his political fortunes.
But he's going further than that. Governor Whitmer of Michigan did an interview over the weekend in which she said that there have been moments in the last couple of weeks where they have already had an agreement with a supplier, a vendor, a contract in place, and at the last minute, the supplies, suddenly the vendor's like, I can't give it to you because the feds told us we should not give them to you. She's like, so the administration has stepped in to prevent a state of whose governor they don't like from getting supplies that they've already negotiated.
And they're going to say, the federal government's going to say it's because of reasons based on like need and allocation and that like Louisiana needs it more or whatever. But that's the issue.
Well, you can't have it both ways. You can't say that the states have to fight it out for themselves and figure it out in the marketplace and also put your finger on the scale when you want to.
That's what they're doing is they are. I mean, obviously it seems very clear that Trump's going to put his finger on the scale, not just because of best application, but for its political benefit. But that's what they're going to say when they're like, wait, why the hell did you ship all this stuff to Louisiana and Florida instead of Michigan, which has almost equal rates of concern right now? And they'll point to some other reason. But really, we know it's because Trump thinks that he's not getting enough appreciation from the governors of Michigan and Washington in particular.
I thought Andrew Cuomo kind of offered kind of the best solution on this issue, because I do understand that every state, fine, they have to look out for their own residents and their own concerns. But like, for example, the governor of Nebraska, red state, Republican, he's like, yeah, we've got like 600 ventilators. We're using like three of them right now. We're using like hardly any of them, but I'm not going to give them to anybody. And what Cuomo suggested was, listen, every states are going to peak differently. And he's right. We're going to be staggering through this like all for the next maybe 6 to 8 months, I'm guessing. And he's like, and that's how you should move the supplies around. Like, we should think nationally, you know, and there could be a coordinated national effort to move supplies to where they are needed. Like, if New York's peaking now, after 3 or 4 weeks, maybe, you know, they're going to be like, okay, now we need half of these ventilators now. We don't need all of these ventilators, and move them to another place. That seems to be in the national interest to me.
That's how it should be done. And according to Dr. Birx, what they're doing. But in reality, it's not. And the problem is that we don't have this coordinated federal response to get the states all moving in the same direction. It's not that the states don't trust one another, but also they don't trust one another. Like, they have no guarantees right now that, like, if Idaho sends its extra ventilators to New York, how can it be sure that for reasons outside of New York's control, they don't end up coming back to them when they need them?
And well, if only there was like at a federal government.
I know. If only there was a coordinating entity like that could do this. Like literally the textbook case for why we have federalism. And Trump is just...
But here's the thing. They can't even get their shit together. Like, okay, so did you hear this? The Thailand story? What happened? This is so embarrassing.
It's also embarrassing. Oh, it's awful and horrifying and scary, but also embarrassing.
Embarrassing, yeah. So last week, apparently some official from the Trump administration calls Thailand, is like, we desperately need, asking for protective gears, like, can you send us a bunch of stuff? And they were so confused. They're like, what are you saying? Because you guys are sending us shipments. You've sent us one, and the second one is coming for the same equipment you're asking us for. So they put a freeze on that shipment. That ship was still out there somewhere in the oceans, and they're like, no, come back. But how embarrassing that, I mean, this is where we're at. Now, on Monday, during the briefing, Trump was like, he's like, we're sending aid to other countries. We're going to send, quote, things that we don't need to other countries. We're going to be sending approximately $100 million worth of things, surgical, medical, hospital things to Italy. How could this be things we don't need?
That I still wonder about, because Italy sent us the freaking test kits and testing strips. So, like, maybe that was part of a deal, which case, fine. But.
Oh, you know, Russia sent a shipment of stuff.
Man, oh, Jesus. Like, America is.
God. I feel like that's the shipment we should not open.
Oh, Russia's sending stuff to us? Yeah, no, send it back.
Yes. There has been a
return to sender, change of address.
Yeah, anything could be in that.
Probably more COVID. But,
yeah, apparently a plane full of supplies they sent. I don't know where, but I read a little bit about it. Okay.
Right now, in our post-apocalyptic society, there are probably three things that are invaluable: toilet paper, Purell, and bottled water, because you can't get that shit anywhere. There's a solution that can solve all your needs, because Clearly Filtered is the new way to think about water filtration.
That's right. You don't have to be part of those throngs of people fighting each other over bottled water in the local big box store,
because you'll lose
and
that fight.
Susan, so. And I, you're gonna lose that fight also. And also, you know what, at some point there might not be any bottled waters, but you don't need it, because you can use Clearly Filtered. Susan and I both got our Clearly Filtered water filters just recently.
And we have Clearly Filtered's water bottle, which is a water bottle you can carry around, and it filtrates right there. So you can, on the go, fill up any fountain and know that your water will be safe and filtered.
It's fantastic. So they have a pitcher and they have a water bottle for your personal use and for your family use.
Now, standard water filters aren't removing all the contaminants that you might think they are, because standard carbon filters only remove chlorine, taste, and odor, and they leave many of the most harmful chemicals that you can't see, taste, or smell. No other water pitcher filter removes more contaminants and at a higher rate than Clearly Filtered.
Their breakthrough affinity filtration technology actually captures and destroys over 230 chemicals. And when I saw this list, because it comes with your pitcher, I was shocked. I didn't even know that many existed in Tapper.
Dude, and if you're like me and you baby your plants, I only use this now to water them, because tap water can kill shit.
And all of their filters are made in the United States, which is really important. Actually, in Alabama. Go Alabama.
And also, the water tastes great, so.
It does. It tastes really good. My whole family's been drinking from the pitcher, and we love it. I have hidden the water bottle, because that's going to be just for me.
So skip the trip to Costco and trying to get water that you're not going to find, and get Clearly Filtered.
Get 20% off your new Clearly Filtered system with code 45th at checkout. Visit clearlyfiltered.com/45th and use the coupon code 45th, and you'll get 20% off your new filtered water system. They ship throughout the U.S. for free, have a 30-day risk-free guarantee, and a lifetime warranty on all their filter systems. clearlyfiltered.com/45th. Believe me, there's no time better than now to get Clearly Filtered. All right, so let's talk about one of the big things that happened in the last few days, and that is this bill finally gets passed. House, Senate, and Trump signs it. It's called the CARES Act.
That's so dumb. Why couldn't they do something better? I swear to God. It's a petty thing to complain about, but like, it's the most generic, stupid acronym I've heard in a while, and that's like most government bills.
I know. Yeah. So the CARES Act, this is supposed to be the $2 trillion, and for some reason, okay, so Trump has a signing ceremony, does not invite a single Democrat to it, no Democratic congressman or woman was invited to the signing ceremony. He's surrounded by his Mitch McConnell's and stuff. And then twice during the signing ceremony, he says it's $6 trillion. And nobody corrects him. He's like, I've never signed something this big, $6 trillion. Oh, my God. And they're all just standing around smiling. So it's $2 trillion.
It was probably a coronavirus party anyway. Democrats didn't want to be there.
Probably.
Dude, did you see Sonny Perdue? I swear to God, I was like, Sonny Perdue is going to be the secret like agent who like infiltrates and infects the entire White House. Because he looks sick as hell.
No, I haven't.
Oh, dude, really. He was coughing and like wet, red and sweaty.
what? Oh, man. I need to go back and look. Well, I mean, couldn't happen to nicer. But anyway, let me stop. All right. So I thought it might be helpful for our listeners because it took me a little bit of digging. I want to know what's in this bill. What does this mean for, you know, people living in this country? And so I thought we'd go over some of the provisions. So apparently there's like, say, it's kind of seven big groups that are going to be impacted by this bill. Individuals, small businesses, big corporations, of course, hospitals and public health. There's a federal safety net and then state and local governments and education. So there's provisions for each of these kind of seven sectors, you could say, for some kind of financial relief. Let's start with individuals. If you're an individual making less than $75,000 a year, you can expect a one-time cash payment of $1,200, which will probably do almost nothing for you.
Yeah. What's that going to do for like a month-long shutdown? But whatever. Better than nothing, I guess, but also what's it going to do?
It cannot pay the rent for most people or pay one. It can't help a person get through a month of any kind of expenses. I don't know. Married couples that have kids will get $500 per child. But if you make as an individual more than 99,000, couples that make twice that, you're not going to get any of that. They're going to base that the cash payments on your latest tax returns from the last couple of years. And there are people who don't file tax returns, but if they get Social Security, they are eligible based on Social Security Administration information. However, there are people who don't make enough to file taxes, but also don't get Social Security.
And
they're
nothing.
The ones who are going to be, they'll get nothing. They'll be left in the lurch. So while it's true it's not much of a payment, unemployment, I think the unemployment provisions are where they're thinking they can fill kind of the financial gap for people. It adds $600 per week from the federal government on top of whatever the base amount a worker gets from the state. So that's pretty good. I have had unemployment in the past. I mean, it's been a long time, but, you know, I think it was like $300 a week. You know, I had it for maybe a couple months. But for example, under this, if you got $300 a week with the extra $600, you're going to get like $900 a week. And that is a significant help. But of course, you could still be making a lot less than you're normally make.
And meanwhile, Trump is still trying to kick off, like, what, how many 100,000 families off of food stamps?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Because he wants means testing and, yeah. But it wasn't that was a battle that was going on in court, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what happened to it. Okay.
They're still fighting that one out.
Okay. It's probably all come to a halt at this point. But they've added 13-week of unemployment insurance, so you can collect it for longer than you normally would. Now, I think what is great is that most folks, if they are part of the gig economy, can't, you know, the freelancers, they normally cannot get unemployment. However, under these provisions, there's something called the Temporary Pandemic Unemployment Assistance. I guess that's it. Anyway, it will also cover them to some extent, but I don't have the details for that.
Yeah. In earlier versions of the bill, they were totally left out, which is just untenable. I mean, everyone's a gig worker these days, it seems like. So yeah. Luckily, there's some protections in there for that. Yeah.
The bill requires all private insurance plans to cover COVID-19 treatments and vaccine, not that there is one, and to make all coronavirus tests, the ones that we can't get, free. However, I actually went to take a look at the Maryland testing site provision. So there's apparently two or three testing sites in Maryland that you have to first make an appointment to, like, this telemed thing where they, like, do an assessment and then see, and then you have to make an appointment and then you go and get it. That, however, says, so... Yeah, if you have insurance, that's fine. But if you don't have insurance, then this doesn't help you because you're going to pay out of pocket. And that's what the website said. You're going to pay like $125 out of pocket.
And guess who doesn't have insurance right now? Everyone who just lost their employment-based insurance plans.
There. Yeah. And imagine you're a family of four or five people. You're living together and you should probably all be tested even if one person is sick. Well, that's hundreds of dollars you got to spend for that testing if you don't have
insurance. And the COBRA payments for people who want to get that to like get insurance before they... get a new job, that is going to be, what, 300% probably of your stimulus bill check, if not more.
Right. And in the midst of all this, the Trump administration, just a couple days ago, they have been considering reopening the enrollment period for Obamacare. They decided we're not going to do this. Just like yesterday, they said they were going to, like, I think the enrollment period ended, like, I don't know, December or something, they're like, okay, we'll reopen it for a few months amidst a fucking global pandemic. And they're like, nope, we decided not to. There are some states that have been able to reopen, including Maryland, by the way. And the reason I say that is because my family hasn't had insurance for like 18 months. We just got re-enrolled like 2 weeks ago, thank God, because Hogan reopened up the re-enrollment. Otherwise, we would have been screwed, which is going to be a lot of the states. Can we talk a little bit about that big slush fund?
Oh, Jesus. This is going to be... I feel my blood pressure going up just thinking about it. This is going to be such a disaster. This is going to be a fucking nightmare. I mean, so in the end, that was a big...
So there's loans and grants, right?
Yeah. The grants part... well, there's both. But, like, this was one of the big sticking points in negotiations because originally it was drafted so that Trump had... Well, the Treasury Department, but through that, Trump himself would have had control over the entire amount to give out as I pleased and with no disclosure requirements for 6 months until after it had been given out. It would have been a nightmare. So, I mean, imagine this. Trump has this money, $500 billion, to hand out to companies. Basically, companies are going to be lining up to sing his praises, knowing that if they don't, there's a good chance they will not get any loans or any grants. And even if that, let's pretend for a moment that doesn't happen. Pretend for a moment Trump wasn't going to give money out based on that. The companies aren't going to believe that. They have no reason whatsoever to think that's true. So they're going to act as if it's the case, even if it's not, because they can't even know for 6 months who got the money. So whether or not they actually hand out the money based on who's praising him, everyone's going to act like that's what the deal is. So in the end, they changed the bill to have sort of a, you know, independent commissioner to oversee it and congressional oversight. They included it in the draft, and they're like, okay, we can sign off now. We have a bill. They send it to the Resolute desk for Trump to sign off on, and he includes a signing statement. It's like, by the way, we're not going to do any of this shit, bitches.
Yeah, he pulled out a Sharpie.
Or we don't have the... they're saying, like, we don't feel bound by these provisions because we think they're unconstitutional. So we don't know how it's going to play out in practice, but come on. In practice, it's going to be a nightmare. All of that oversight they carefully tried to draft in is not going to happen. And as we know from the impeachment proceedings... Good luck trying to enforce it because it's not going to happen.
He said in the statement that it raises that these provisions raise constitutional concerns. He said, you know, the requirement to consult with Congress regarding executive decision making violates the separation of powers. He said, as per the special inspector general, which they want to establish this position, he said, I do not understand and my administration will not treat this provision as permitting this inspector general to issue reports to Congress. He said that certain other provisions purport to condition the authority of officers to spend or reallocate funds upon consultation with congressional committees. And he's like, these provisions are impermissible forms of congressional aggrandizement and respect to execution of laws. That money is going to go to him and his cronies. That $500 billion is going to go to him and his cronies. Now,
I don't even think it'll go to him. I think he'll use other provisions to get his loans and money that he wants. I think he's going to use it to get praise and attention and, like, basically in-kind contributions to his campaign from companies. Basically, no company can, like, insult Trump or they ain't going to get shit.
I think that's fine. But I do think that...
that's not fine. That's
every
fine.
Reason. No, it's not fine. But what I'm saying is I do also think there's no reason that his own businesses and properties are not going to benefit from this. And
No. Some of the money was limited that it could not go to the president or his family or members of Congress or their families. So there are some...
What if he says, well, I think the Congress is overstepping its bounds and they can. And what are they going
to
do?
He doesn't need to because there's other provisions in there that will allow him to get like non-recourse, like basically free money loans for his business, for some of the grants that are set aside for like hotels with under 500 employees.
Right. And I want to talk a little bit about that because I'm sure we have listeners who are small business owners. There is, between the emergency grants and the forgivable loans, $360 billion allocated for small business for the SBA to provide loans of up to $10 million per business. So this could be, again, a business with less than 500 people. It could be a sole proprietor. It could be, it seems like it can, even 501c3s apparently. qualify for some of these grants, and these are forgivable loans. So if you meet certain requirements, you don't have to pay them back. And you can reuse the loans to maintain your payroll. I think you can get up to like a year's worth of payroll. I have a good friend who is a vice president of like business banking in a very large banking chain. And we talked yesterday and she's like, oh, her business clients are just, whether or not they need a loan, they're lining up. They're like, we just want to get, because we don't know how the economy is going to fare. And I think I get that. A lot of businesses don't know if they'll be able to stay open on their own without something like this. So she's like, we're opening up our loan portal this week and expect to get slammed. So it'll be a first come, first serve type of situation.
So one thing I have not looked into, and I'm curious about how they're going to try and resolve, is how this is going to get administered, because it's under the SBA.
Shit show, Susan.
It's going to be Small Business Administration, but like that's not a big agency. That's not like a like they don't have the kind of manpower, as far as I'm aware, to administer a program of this size. I don't know if they're going to bring in other agencies or what. But
spreadsheets, Susan. They're going to use spreadsheets. You know, just Pence a couple days ago, it was reported yesterday. He just asked every hospital in the country, can you please email us how many COVID patients?
Email us? Wow.
I swear to God, just email. So, yeah, it's going to be a spreadsheet.
We don't have, so every other country, you've got the government keeping track of these numbers. In the U.S., it is basically just volunteers and news organizations that are doing it, because the government numbers, CDC's numbers, are just so out of date, they're pointless.
Yeah, I think it's going to be tough to administer all this. I don't know how long it's going to take. I don't even know for the individual payments, how long it's going to take for people to actually get those checks.
If you don't have direct deposit set up already, it's maybe like 4 months.
That's helpful.
Yeah.
And I also don't know how states are handling tens and tens and tens of thousands of unemployment applications almost daily at this point.
It's crazy. The numbers are insane. They're going to get worse. This is going to be, it's going to make 2008 look like a walk in the park.
Yeah. I read this morning that, I don't know which reserve, some reserve, I don't think it's a Federal Reserve, but anyway, some financial institution projected a 33% unemployment rate at this point.
Oh, Jesus, what?
Yeah. I can look it up. I don't know. I can't remember which institution it was. But
scary times ahead. So on the defense front, we have a couple issues going on there. Namely, there was a remarkable 4-page letter from the captain of a aircraft carrier, like one of the planks of like our national defense system, basically saying we have just wildfire contagion passing through the ship. It's like the cruise ships, but worse, because there's not, nice little discreet cruise cabins for passengers. It's just military members on the ships all together. And the COVID cases
in Guam, they're stuck in Guam
going forever. And he's like, if we were in war, yes, we could ask we would have to go to war like this, and we'd ask our service members to do their jobs anyway. But we're not at war, and we cannot ask them to die for this for no goddamn reason. But like, that's a huge, he's totally right, and it's horrifying it's come to this, but this is
what is he asking for? What are they asking for?
To take them in off the ship. To basically temporarily take this aircraft carrier out of position, out of the equation, to leave a hole. As like, this is like one, like basically when we have our entire defense plan, like this is one of the planks that we depend on, having the aircraft carrier there. And they move them around, and that's like always sort of a central basis of how everything's planned out. So taking one out is a huge deal. Let's sub it out for a bit and put it back in. This is a very big deal that will change our entire approach to like world security temporarily. But he's like, we're not in war right now. We should definitely not have our soldiers or our service members die for this. And it's not clear that Trump is going to do anything about this, or if he's even going to it's not clear what's going to happen. Side note, looking at the cruises, looking at the military ships, you can see what a fucking nightmare this is going to be in prisons, and already is in prisons, because this virus is so contagious, and as a matter of everyday life, it can spread really fast. But when you get to a situation like a prison or a ship, my God, it's insane. It's worse than the choir. It's going to go everywhere so fast. But the whole premise of that letter from the captain was like, yeah, well, we're not at war, so we can't ask our people to die for this. As of an hour ago, Robbie, did you see that tweet come out?
Oh, God, yeah, I did.
Yeah, yeah. So Trump, about an hour ago, decides to tweet out, upon information and belief, Iran or its proxies are planning a sneak attack on U.S. troops and or assets in Iraq. If this happens, Iran will pay a very heavy price indeed. What the fuck? I mean, maybe it's just him, like, spouting off. It is him just spouting off, but, like, what the fuck?
Now, you know what's interesting is somebody noticed that, or somebody commented about that tweet, that using that language upon information and belief, that is how, that's the kind of language.
Do it.
Well, also intelligence briefings usually have that language. And by the way, he had an intelligence briefing right before he tweeted this out. So literally the man gets a briefing and then he tweets out what's in this confidential briefing probably. So
he thinks he can stop them from attacking us by tweeting that? Like, what the fuck?
So I mean, that's his way of, I know what you're doing, or I know what you're, but maybe, I don't know, maybe you want to do it through diplomatic channels or like communications between governments and not on Twitter.
What the fuck, man? Like, can you imagine, like, we're going to, he's going to start a war with Iran. We're still going to have this pandemic that we're having hundreds of thousands of Americans die from. And then just for fun, the world's probably going to have like an earthquake somewhere in the U.S.
Well, so Idaho, Boise just had a 6.5 yesterday.
Jesus. So like, what's going to happen? Like, Trump can't do this. Like, the administration cannot handle this. We can't handle what we've got right now. He's piling on more problems on top of it.
North Korea, by the way, also adding to the mix, the axis of evil. They, in this past month, March has been a real, real bad month for everybody who cares about life and peace. In the month of March, they completed four missile tests. They confirmed on Monday, they did a whole series of tests. They said, of course, it's a big, you know, whatever, success. I don't know what kind of numbers are coming out of North Korea, though, on coronavirus. I'm guessing they're reporting zero.
It's bad there. It's got to be bad there. It's got to be worse than this. It's probably the worst by far.
It has to be. It has to be. It has to be. Of course, South Korea is like, oh, it's kind of inappropriate in the middle of a global pandemic for you to be firing missiles, but it's been doing missile testing. And I haven't seen any official response from this administration at all in response to this.
Trump has made clear he doesn't care as long as it's quote unquote short range missiles. He's like, whatever, go for it. Do what you want.
Didn't he just a week or two ago like reach out to Kim Jong-un and say, hey, you need some help? We'd love to help you.
He did. And he is clearly just like greenlit all this experimenting by North Korea. And they're using the moment where everyone's distracted to like fire off a lot of rockets to show their power, do any testing they need to do. Like, because no one cares. No one has time for this. Like, whatever, North Korea, do your thing. We're busy here.
You know, speaking of experimenting and stuff, what is going on on the front on the hydroquinone? I can't even say it. I'm so sorry. And azithromycin.
Hydroxychloroquine?
Yes, something like that. That one. That this combination that Trump has touted over and over again. I thought I read that after a couple of weeks of him repeating this shit and being rebutted by lots of medical professionals, the FDA is now like green lighting, I think, testing around it to see if
they had already the testing was already going on before Trump got in this bandwagon. And testing is very much appropriate and hopefully it works out. But first of all, we have now politicized a potential medical treatment for this pandemic, which is just bad news bears for everyone all around. It also makes it hard to get good data because we now have widespread use of this in uncontrolled settings or less controlled than we need to have it optimally. And any findings are going to be inherently political because Trump will make them that way. If they're good, he's going to tout as a political cure. Hopefully they're good. And if they're not good, or even if they're like mediocre, he's going to be like, oh, it's only because the fake news media wants me to lose that they're saying it's not the miracle cure. And so far, the data does not support that it's that effective.
But the thing is, he won't ever back down from the claim. He just won't. And so people are going to continue to...
Well, here's where I'm at right now. Okay, so remember back in like 2017, 2018, whatever, when Cohen was still in the picture?
200 years ago.
Two lifetimes ago when Cohen was like the personal attorney of President Trump. He was getting all kinds of payments from private companies with interest that they wanted Trump to advance. Like crazy amounts of money. But basically, he was a lobbyist at that point. Well, there's also been evidence that Giuliani has acted in a similar role, not just on the political, like, foreign diplomacy stage, but also in the same way that Michael Cohen had been doing it by getting money from private corporations who are hoping he can influence the president. I swear to God, I hope someone's looking to find out what Bayer or one of the other companies that produces chloroquine or hydroxychloroquine, if they're paying him off. Because Giuliani has been all over this. Like, he's constantly promoting how it's a perfect cure and, like, insane numbers, like, oh, this crazy doctor in New York treated 629 patients and all of them were cured without intubation from this.
Oh, the thing is, they have no sense of, like, even trying to be subtle about these things or doing it back door. They're just right out publicly. There's no saying all the quiet parts out loud. Yeah, totally. I mean, there has to be a there. I mean,
I bet Bayer's paying
there's
him
a financial
off, I swear to God.
Connection. Yeah.
Maybe not Bayer. There's a lot of companies involved, but, like, Bayer is being shady about this. I want to know what's going on. So that's where the reporters should be looking at, not the freaking mask caper of 2020. Because actually they even suspended Rudy Giuliani's account on Twitter because he kept making these unfounded claims of this being a miracle cure.
And
then they unfreeze his Twitter account and he went right back at it.
Oh, one thing, Susan. I think I promised our listeners, I agreed with you that I would watch. I can't do it. I can't. I tried. I really did.
The Love is Blind.
I watched 40
You're supposed to hate watch
minutes.
It.
I couldn't even hate watch it. You know what I did hate watch, but I loved?
What?
Tiger King. Tiger King.
I can't watch it. I watched the first episode. I just felt so, like, all the poor tigers.
What's happening with the animals is atrocious.
I couldn't do Tiger King. You can't do Love is Blind.
I can't do Love is Blind. The thing about Tiger King is I'll tell you what it is. The thing about Tiger King is every single person involved, every single person could have a full-on documentary made about them because they're all insane. Whereas I found every single character that I was introduced to in the first episode of Love is Blind to be completely facetious and ridiculous.
That's
and
the
when they're like, I think
you,
I love you,
you
I'm like,
now.
Stop it. I love you.
All right. New show for you then. This one I actually unironically love for real. Okay. The Circle.
Really?
Yeah.
That's like the social influencer type of, what is it?
It is, like, it is reality TV trash, but I actually legit like it. It was the best reality show I've seen.
Damn. Okay. All right. I'm willing to do that.
Not counting Orangutan Jungle School. That's the best one I've ever seen. But this is second best.
That's a thing?
Orangutan Jungle School is absolutely a thing, and I've watched way too much of it this quarantine.
Can I just tell you something, Susan? So New York City just today announced that all playgrounds will be finally shut down. And at least in my area, when we've gone to the parks, the playgrounds have had, like, police tape around them. You can't get in.
Which that's kind has of not horrifying. Stopped.
I mean, but you know what? When you have little kids, my son thinks that's to play with. It's just been awful. But I bet you that before long, we're going to be having orangutan playing in our local parks because I don't know if you're noticing this, but all around the world, the wildlife is returning. It's crazy. All around the world, as people have gone into their homes, there are like bears where people have never seen bears. There was like this endangered, never seen civet cat.
Not that was false.
The civet cat?
Yeah, it was not it was a different species. There's a similar one that's very rare, but that was not the rare type. There's a really super rare civet that's never seen, like last seen like decades ago, but it's got a much fatter tail. This one has a skinny tail.
It was still civet cat where
it was still cool.
Okay. Like in an empty bazaar place, marketplace, there's these goats that have taken, these are beautiful, mythical looking white, shaggy mountain goats that have taken over like this little town in the UK. Just wildlife has come and they're like, we're back. We've been here all along. We've just been waiting.
Nature just needs to pause. They didn't need us gone. They just need us a little bit quieter. They're like, sweet, we're coming back in.
Yep. So that could be the only silver lining. I'm okay with them. Bring them back. It's fine. All right, guys. Thank you so much for tuning in. I will give The Circle a try. And
I promise it's better. You're supposed to hate watch Love is Blind, but The Circle is good.
I just hated it. So, all right. I'll try Circle. All right, Susan, stay safe. We'll be back in 7 days. A big thanks to all our listeners for tuning in to the 45th podcast week after week. And if you'd like to give us further support, you can do that by becoming a patron at patreon.com/45thpod. By doing so, you can become a supporter and patron for as little as $5 a month. And to do so, again, go to patreon.com/45thpod. A shout out and thank you to our sponsors. They make this program possible. And I urge our listeners to please check out our sponsors and use their products. And thank you to them for helping us produce week after week. Thank you to our audio producer, Hannah McCarthy, our executive producer, Meethal Thelhan. And you can find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Our handle is @45thpod. Our website is www.45thpod.com. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next week.